Chapter 25. Ardamantua. They had been walking around the lake edge in the company of Severance's squad for several hours when they spotted the flare. It lofted up in the distance, an incandescently bright pinprick, then shivered as it hung in place before fading and falling away, all effort spent. "One of mine!" Severance cried. "Move!" They began to make the best pace possible. As the leaders ran ahead, Captain Severance told Daylight that his subdivided wall had agreed to use basic flares and visual signals to stay in contact, given that everything up to and including short-range helm-to-helm vox was useless. The ragged Asmodai troopers couldn't keep up. Major Nyman had put his helmet back on, exhausted by the impure air, but rather more troubled by the constant noise bursts. Even those Asmodai who had kept their visors of their orbital drop suits firmly sealed since planetfall were feeling the effects. The noise bursts echoed into the cavities of their helmets and armor, unsettling them. It was psychologically hammering them. Severance pointed to four of his men and told them to stay with the guardsmen and bring them along behind. Then he set out at full pace. It took them half an hour to reach the origin of the signal flare. Daylight was beside Severance as they slowed to approach. It was a second search party from Lotus Gate Wall, commanded by a sergeant called Diligent. "Good to see you, sir," the sergeant called out. He hesitated as he saw Daylight and the other space marines new to him. "I see you've made discoveries of your own," he remarked. "What did you find?" asked Severance. "The blister nest, or what's left of it," said Diligent. "And survivors." The survivors of the original undertaking assault had taken shelter in the ruins of the blister nest, using its structure to weather out the worst the gravity storms threw at them. They had, in the weeks since, constructed a makeshift stockade from boulders, wreckage, and parts of the nest structure. Inside the jagged walls, there were men from Ballard Gateway, Hemispheric, Anterior Six Gate, and Daylight Walls, about 130 of them all told, together with a few fragile servitors. There was no substantial equipment, no heavy weapons or vehicles with them, and precious little munition supply. First Captain Algerin of Hemispheric had command. "We met in bad days," he said to Severance and Daylight. He looked at Daylight and at Tranquility and Zarathustra nearby. "You left the walls unguarded to come for us? I'm not sure I approve."
"You're not the first person to express that thought, Captain," said Daylight. "We made our choice. The chapter was beset."
"Worse than beset," said Algerin. His voice dropped.
"Worse than beset." He looked at the ground. His armor was almost black with filth, and it showed hundreds of nicks and gouges from chrome claws. "The chapter master is dead," he said, aiming each word like a lasbolt at the ground. "He reached the surface by teleport before the flagship was lost. He came to us. He was with us for 3 weeks. Chromes took him, rent him. There were 300 of us then. They wear us down, there are so many of them. Attrition, the coward's tactic." Algerin looked at them. "He was so angry," he said. "Mirren, such a great man, but so angry. He railed at the gods, at the stars, to see his fleet wrecked and his chapter shredded, and the honor that has carried us through at the forefront of all chapters since the very start, shredded away by animals, by vermin, and a crooked planet." He took a breath. "They killed him because of his anger, you know," he said. "He wanted to kill them. He wanted to kill them all, but there were too many. I tried to pull him back. He..." Algerin stopped. He looked at Daylight. "You have brought ships to take us off here, War Brother?" he asked.
"I have," replied Daylight. "But conditions are still bad. We have to devise a way for them to get close enough to effect evac."
"I don't think conditions will improve," said Algerin. "Not any time soon."
He looked up as Severance's men brought the Asmodai stragglers into the makeshift fortification.
"Men," he said, unimpressed, "they will not last long. We had about 50 auxiliaries with us at the start. The noises drove them mad in the first week. We had to..."
"It wasn't a good situation.
Only one of them survived. I suspect it's because he was scatterbrained to begin with. He's determined, though, I'll give him that. determined to puzzle it out.
What do you mean? Asked Daylight.
See for yourself, Algernon invited. He's with one of yours.
I am Slaughter, said the second captain of Daylight Wall Company. I am Daylight, said Daylight. I'm glad of the sight of you, said Slaughter. You came for us. That won't be forgotten.
Daylight nodded.
I am heartened to hear that sentiment from one mouth at least. Who is your charge here? He asked.
A bedraggled and filthy human in ragged robes was hunkered in the corner of the nest chamber, working at various pieces of Imperial apparatus. The devices, stacked and piled against the chamber wall, many of them damaged, were running off battery power. Several of them had clearly been customized, refitted, or repurposed.
He is the major spyologist sent to accompany our mission, Slaughter explained.
The chamber was gloomy and dank, part of the surviving underground burrows of the blister nest. Water dripped from the organic arch of the roof.
He was supposed to study the xenoforms while we killed them. I was set to guard him when our fortunes changed. I've been doing that ever since, pretty much.
They approached the scientist. He was intent on his work, muttering to himself. He was in need of a decent shave. His hair, dirty and unruly, had been clipped back in a bunch, using the bent clasp of an ammunition pack.
His name is Laurentis, said Slaughter. Majos, said Daylight, crouching beside the Majos biologist. Majos, I am Daylight.
Laurentis looked at him for a moment.
Oh, a new one, he said. You're new. He's new, Slaughter. See there? I'm beginning to tell you apart.
He smiled. Noise bursts echoed outside the chamber, and Laurentis winced and rubbed his ears roughly with begrimed knuckles.
The wavelength is changing. It's changing. Today and these last few days. Greater intensity. Yes, greater intensity.
The Majos biologist looked at them as if they might understand.
I had specialist equipment, he said. I was sent it by the chapter master himself.
He paused and thought, his eyes darkening.
He's dead now, isn't he?
Yes, said Slaughter.
Well, yes. Sad. Anyway, before that happened, him dying, he sent me equipment. I asked him for it. Specialist equipment. I asked for it, you see. But so much of it was damaged before I could use it. Everything went a bit crazy. Yes, a bit crazy.
The Majos believed from the very outset, Slaughter said to Daylight, that the noise bursts were a form of communication. He wanted to decipher them. A drop of specialist equipment to allow him to do that was arranged, but it had been overrun by chromes and half scrapped by the time we got to it. Communications, said Daylight. From the chromes?
I thought so at first,
said Laurentis, jumping up suddenly to stretch his cramping legs.
Yes, yes, I did, at first. I thought we had underestimated the technical abilities of the chromes. I thought we had underestimated their sapience. They migrate from world to world. That suggested a great capacity for.
Another noise burst, a longer one, had just echoed through the darkness of the stockade and the ruined nest, and it had rather distracted him.
What was I saying?
He asked them, digging his knuckles into his ears again and jiggling his head.
Communication?
Prompted Daylight. He remembered very clearly what had been spoken of on the bridge of the azimuth. The noises coming from Adamantua read as organic, boosted and amplified for broadcast, but organic. Like a voice.
You believe it's communication? He pressed.
Yes, yes, that's what I thought. That was my theory. And it seemed a valid one. I thought the chromes were trying to surrender or negotiate peace. That's what I thought at first. Do you remember me saying that, Slaughter?
I do, Majos, said Slaughter.
Then I thought they might be trying to compose a challenge. Then I thought they might be warning us, you know, warning us not to mess with them. Then I thought they might be trying to warn us about something else.
Like what? Asked Daylight.
Well, said Laurentis, it doesn't much matter because I don't believe it is them at all anymore. Do I, Slaughter?
You don't, said Slaughter.
I think it's someone else. Yes, that's what I think. Someone else.
The Major's biologist looked at them both.
What do you think?
He asked.
I think I'd like you to explain more, said Daylight. Who do you think this someone else is?
Laurentius shrugged.
Ooh, someone very advanced, he said. Very advanced. Take gravity, for example. They are very, very advanced in that field. Gravitic engineering. Imagine, they're shifting something. And this world, it's just the delivery point.
What are they shifting?
Something very big, said Laurentius.
A moon? Asked Daylight.
Slaughter looked at him sharply.
It could be a moon. Yes, it could be, said Laurentius. You've seen the reflection in the lake, have you?
I have, said Daylight.
Whatever it is, it's still in transition. If it's a moon or a planetoid, well, throne save us all. That's a different class of everything. I mean, we can terraform, we can even realign small planetoids in system, but shifting planetary bodies on an interstellar range, that's godlike. There are rumours, of course, stories, myths. They say that the ancients, the precursor races, they say they had power of that magnitude. Even the Eldar once, at the very peak of their culture. But not anymore. No one can do that anymore. Not on that scale.
Except whoever the voice belongs to? Asked Daylight.
Yes, well, perhaps, said Laurentius.
And who does the voice belong to? Asked Daylight.
Noises boomed and howled. Laurentius scrambled at his ears again like a man with head lice and pulled a pained face.
That's the real trick, isn't it? He agreed. Knowing that thing. We'd have to translate the words first and find out what they were saying. Maybe they're introducing themselves to us. Maybe this is a contact message. Hello. I've spent 6 weeks trying to figure that out.
He made a sweeping gesture that encompassed his makeshift pile of devices and equipment.
6 weeks, working with these items, which are hardly ideal. It's so hard to jury-rig what I'm missing. The parsing cogitators are a particular loss, and the vocalization monitors. I've made do with quite a lot, actually quite a lot, but thrown alive what I wouldn't give for a decent-grade tech servitor, or a vox servitor, or an augmetic receiver. Cranial implants. I never took them myself, you see.
If this is contact, asked Daylight, it's surely hostile.
Laurentius nodded, blinking away another noise burst with a shake of his head.
I mean, definitely. But it would still be worth hearing what it had to say for itself.
You would confirm a hostile intent, then?
I don't have to, Laurentius exclaimed. Look at the rats.
The rats? Asked Daylight.
No, not rats. The chromes, that's what I mean. The chromes, like rats. You can gather so much data by observing the behaviour patterns and habits of animals. Rats. Remember when I first called them rat slaughter? Remember that?
I do, Majos, said Slaughter.
I said it as a joke at first, said Laurentius. I said it because their behaviour reminded me of rat behaviour. Rats suddenly turning hostile and flooding into a new area with great and uncharacteristic aggression. It can be very scary, very dangerous. They're not a threat. They live under the floorboards and in the walls for years, never harming anyone. And then they are turned into a threat. Turned into one.
How? Asked Daylight.
Because they are threatened by a greater natural predator, something they fear. Yes, fear enough to make them attack things they would not normally attack. In this case, the Imperium. And space marines. Goodness me, the chromes are just animals. They are just vermin. They're rats. Rats, you see. We're fighting them because they've been driven into our zones of space by something they do not want to be around. They are fleeing. Fleeing for their lives. And it's made them desperate enough to battle us.
He looked at them both.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
He asked, pleased with himself. He grinned. Daylight noticed that at some point, several of the Magos biologist's teeth had been knocked out. The gappy smile made him look more like an eager child than a credible expert.
If they're animals, how are they travelling between worlds? Asked Daylight. How are they affecting interstellar and void transport?
Laurentius clapped his hands and did a little jig.
That's another thing, you see. You see? That's sort of what clinches it, because it neatly answers the other mystery. How do the Chromes get from world to world? How do they migrate? What explains their diaspora? Nothing. They can't do it. They're animals. QED, something is bringing them here. They're moving through the tunnels.
The tunnels? Asked Daylight.
Yes, tunnels. There's probably a better word for it. I haven't really worked this material up into a presentation form yet. Tunnels will have to do. The tunnels built by whoever the voice belongs to.
He looked at Slaughter and then Daylight, then back to Slaughter.
Whoever owns the voice,
he said quietly, as though someone might overhear,
is equipped with a highly superior tech level. They can manipulate, at a fundamental level, gravity and other primary forces of the universe. They can, so it would appear, reposition planetary bodies over interstellar distances. They do this by constructing tunnels. Let's use that word. Tunnels through space. Perhaps through the warp itself, as we understand it. Not that we really understand it, mind. Or through some closely associated stratum of subspace. Perhaps a gravitational sublayer, or even a teleportational vector. I can't really be sure yet. So let's simply settle on the term subspace tunnel, shall we? Now the Chromes, they're vermin, you see, pests. They live in that subspace realm we're talking about, like rats live in an attic or a sewer. The subspace realm is an attic of the universe we don't ever see. A cosmic sewer. And as the owner of the voice moves through that attic, subspace realm, are you still with me? As the owner of the voice does that, it drives them ahead of it.
The Chromes are spread indirectly, said Daylight, via the transportational rifts constructed by this unknown xenoform.
Very well put, Laurentius exclaimed. Can I write that down? Like rats in an attic that's on fire, the Chromes are being driven out ahead of the flames, fighting anything that gets in their way. Or like rats in a sewer, where there are big lizards of some sort, and the big lizards are trying to eat them, so they're afraid, and they're running away from the big lizards, and...
I get it, said Daylight. Calm yourself, Magos.
He looked over at Slaughter.
We very much need to find out what's coming, Captain, he said.
Slaughter nodded.
It's not going to be pretty when it arrives, said Laurentius,
quieter now.
It's an immense threat. The Chromes may be pests and essentially non-sentient, but they are durable and resilient and highly numerous, and their entire population, whole nests, whole family communities, millions strong, is being forced to flee for parsecs across the galaxy, through the cellars and chimneys of space.
He paused.
Just like rats.
Daylight was thinking.
Did you say, he asked the Magos biologist suddenly, that you needed a servitor? What about a tech adept? Would a tech adept do?